Welcome to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening in. I'm here with engineer Mike Murphy and a banana who will be joining us later during the show. I'm going to label this week with one word, sunny. Mike Murphy, my engineer, has inspired me to label each week now after his show. You name it. So this week I'm going to call sunny. Today, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, all of these days have the prognosis that is, guess what? Blue skies and sun. Temperatures are going up too. Today should be in the 30s, but then we will see it going up to the high 40s and into the 50s. By Sunday, it's expected to be up to 54 degrees. So bye-bye snow. Don't take the plants out, though. Although nights will no longer be terribly cold, it will still dip below freezing at nights. By the way, have you been enjoying the moon, too? Wow, what a gorgeous spring moon. Okay, so here's Mr. Dennis Hart to bring you a roundup of recent Iowa news.
The coronavirus and lots of legislative activity inside the state capitol made big news around Iowa last week. First, the virus. Both the death toll and the number of infections from the coronavirus continued to go up, but at a much slower rate. By yesterday afternoon, 5,471 people had died from the virus in Iowa. About 363,500 people had been infected by it. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds said last week that workers in industries where they cannot social distance and some people with disabilities would likely become eligible to receive coronavirus vaccinations sometime this month. 70% of people within those populations are expected to receive at least one dose of the vaccine by the start of April. The governor also said she was not aware that Iowa was among the slowest states to have delivered two shots of the coronavirus vaccine to its residents. The Iowa Capital Dispatch had reported that the state had ranked near the bottom of the 50 states in the percentage of the population that had received two doses of the vaccine. The governor said, in her words, "I haven't looked at that. I'm not aware of that." This after Polk County health officials had said last week that some people may not receive their second doses of the Moderna coronavirus vaccine on time. Health officials said they had made a mistake, thinking the supply of both the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines would continue to go up, but they did not. Polk County officials said they would focus on providing the second doses. Meanwhile, Governor Reynolds said this past Saturday that she opposed the stimulus bill that had been passed by the U.S. House of Representatives. The Republican governor said the proposal, in her words, punishes states that took a measured approach to the pandemic and entered the crisis with healthy state budgets and strong economies. Iowa's three Republican U.S. Congress members all voted against the stimulus bill, while Democratic Congresswoman Cindy Axne voted in favor of it. At the state legislature last week, the Senate and House both passed a bill shortening Iowa's early voting period, reducing Election Day voting by an hour, and creating a stricter deadline for returning absentee ballots. The bill also would shorten Iowa's early voting period by 9 days, from 29 to 20, prevent county auditors from mailing absentee ballot request forms to voters unless the voter asked for one, and keep auditors from setting up satellite voting sites unless they are petitioned to do so. The state Senate also passed a bill that would require Iowans to undergo added verification steps, including checks of their household assets, to receive food stamps and other benefits. The bill also would instruct the State Department of Human Services to use a computer system to conduct eligibility checks for Iowans for other public assistance programs, including Medicaid. Also last week, Iowa Senate Republicans advanced a bill that would expand the reasons for disciplining school superintendents and school board members. It would expand the grounds for removing school board members from office to include knowingly and intentionally violating federal or state laws governing the operation of a school. One provision would specifically target the Des Moines Public School Superintendent's license. And State Senate Republicans advanced a bill that would outlaw tax breaks for and contracts with high-tech companies that censor free speech. Iowa is among several states considering legislation to govern companies like Facebook and Twitter, during a nationwide debate about the role big technology companies play in the public sphere. Meanwhile, House and Senate committees considered bills that would require Iowa State University, the University of Iowa, and the University of Northern Iowa to educate teachers, faculty, administrators, and other staff on First Amendment protections and restrict the use of school money toward partisan activities. In another story, a bill advanced in the State House that would cap non-economic damages in a lawsuit to $750,000 for victims of car crashes, no matter how many victims were involved. The bill does not block car accident victims from collecting economic damages, such as those tied to medical expenses, property damages, or lost wages. The cap applies to damages such as pain and suffering and mental anguish. Meanwhile, a Republican proposal to cut unemployment insurance benefits won approval from an Iowa House committee last week. The bill would slow the amount of money being drained from the state's unemployment trust fund. The legislation would decrease the maximum weekly benefits claimants can receive and require workers to wait a week before receiving unemployment insurance. There was also word that the state house had passed a bill that would let Iowans get a coronavirus vaccine shot at the dentist. That bill would let dentists give both the virus shot and flu vaccine shots. In the state Senate, a bill advanced that would give Iowa redemption centers their first raise since the state's bottle bill went into effect more than 40 years ago. The bill would double the handling fee for each bottle and can go to 2 cents for redemption centers, but not grocery stores or other retailers, on July 1st. Also last week, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signed into law a 2.4% increase in per-pupil state aid for Iowa's K through 12 schools. The legislature had passed the increase 2 weeks ago. It will add $179 to the state cost per pupil. In the U.S. Senate last week, former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack was confirmed as President Biden's Secretary of Agriculture. It's the second time Vilsack will serve as Ag Secretary. He previously did so under former President Barack Obama. Both Iowa Republican U.S. Senators Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst voted in favor of confirming Vilsack. Still in the world of politics, Senator Grassley said he would make a decision about whether to seek re-election sometime this coming fall. Grassley has been the center of growing speculation about whether he will seek an eighth term in office. He is 87 years old. Also last week, new information emerged about two Iowans who had been arrested in connection with a riot at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. New court documents revealed that Salvador Sandoval Jr. allegedly assaulted multiple law enforcement officers inside the Capitol. And those documents showed that both Sandoval and his mother Deborah had posted photos or sent videos of themselves on social networks during and after the attack on the Capitol building. In another story, word last week that a Lincoln High School student in Des Moines had brought a loaded handgun to school. The weapon was found in a backpack. Police took the 15-year-old student into custody. They did not identify the student. In other news last week, word that February's record low temperatures in Iowa have state residents bracing for budget-busting power bills. But power suppliers like MidAmerican Energy and Alliant Energy said it's too early to determine exactly how much the cold weather could impact customer utility bills. MidAmerican said consumers used 50% more natural gas over the past few weeks compared to the historic average over that period. There was also word that the city of Des Moines was headed for the record books, at least when it comes to the amount of snow it's had this winter. So far, more than 54 inches of snow had fallen in Des Moines as of last Tuesday. That's more than double the average snowfall up to that time, and it's close to the 10th snowiest winter in the city's history. In case you're wondering, the snowiest winter in Des Moines history came back in 1911 and 1912, when 72 inches fell. Meanwhile, the Des Moines Register reported that the number of citations against Des Moines property owners who did not get snow off their sidewalks had doubled this winter compared to last year. The city had issued more than 320 citations by a week ago. Fines start at $75 for a first offense, up to $175 for a fifth or more offense. Still in Des Moines last week, word that officials were considering adopting a program called Cure Violence that its organizers say could reduce violence in the city by up to 40% in its first year. The program would cost up to $500,000 each year. It would employ 5 or 6 so-called violence interrupters who would be embedded in the community. Their job would be to anticipate violence, mediate conflict, and prevent retaliation. Target areas identified by the city include the Drake neighborhood and various areas by Evelyn K. Davis Park. In the community of Armstrong, the mayor resigned last week. Greg Boom had been accused of defrauding his small town of thousands of dollars and covering it up. He, along with the town's police chief, its city clerk, and two former city clerks, had been charged in a plot to loot city coffers. The police chief is Boom's son-in-law. Meanwhile, last week, the Des Moines Public School District put an employee on unpaid administrative leave after he was charged with sexual abuse. 43-year-old Jesse Ellen McIntosh was accused of committing sexual abuse on a girl under the age of 12. McIntosh is a custodian at Weeks Middle School. In Clive last week, a new behavioral health facility opened. The $1 million facility was paid for by Mercy One and the Pennsylvania-based Universal Health Systems. It eventually will have 134 beds. Experts say Iowa is short by about 200 inpatient beds to meet the state's needs for behavioral health treatment. Back in Des Moines, word last week that the Greater Des Moines YMCA had decided to sell three buildings the organization owns, the Wellmark downtown, Walnut Creek in West Des Moines, and Waukee. The Y hopes to lease those same buildings back. The Y is facing $6 million in lost revenue because of the coronavirus pandemic. Also last week, word that the Iowa Board of Regents had approved policies aimed at bolstering free discussion on college campuses, as well as penalties for free speech violations and restrictions on public policy positions by college leadership. And coming up tomorrow, Tuesday, some central Iowa voters will get to cast ballots in special elections. Voters in Ankeny and Johnston will be asked to weigh in on how their school districts can use certain tax revenue. In Mitchellville, voters will decide whether the city can issue up to $1.5 million in general obligation bonds to pay for a new fire station. And in Indianola, three people are running for mayor. And that is your summary of quite a week of news from all around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart. Thank you for the privilege of your time. I'll be right back here tonight at 7 on Capitol Week when Laura Bellin and I will discuss what the state legislature did last week and what's coming up there this week. And then I'll be back on Local Talk this coming Friday with word on what makes news in Ames. Have a great week.
Sunny. Yesterday my life was filled with rain. Sunny. You smiled at me and really eased the pain. Now the dark days are done and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true. I love you. Sunny. Thank you for the sunshine you gave. Sunny. Thank you for the love you brought my way. You gave to me your all in all. And now I feel 10 feet tall. Sunny one so true. I love you. Sunny. Thank you for the truth you let me see. Sunny. Thank you for the facts from A to Z. My life was torn like windblown sand. Then a rock was formed when we held hands. Sunny. Sunny one so true. I love you.
And this is Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for the hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you, Dennis Hart, for the news. And that was followed by Sunny by Bobby Hebb, one of my favorite songs. And I know it is quite a bit early to talk about spring, but the sunny weather is inspiring. So let's do it anyway. After I make breakfast for my dad, Klaus, in the mornings, I like to sit outside for a few minutes next to the garden and prepare for the day, feeling grateful to be alive. And these days, watching the return to life on the land with the end of winter. Yesterday, as I sat there, I could see so much more of the ground, the garden dwarf, was starting to reappear because the snow is disappearing. And I started thinking for the first time, so what exactly should I be doing to get this place ready? So I was thinking, this year I don't want to be behind. So this is where Lana Nachtigall comes in. Welcome, Lana. This is a conversation I am so looking forward to. Let's talk about preparing the garden for a few minutes. So if you don't know Lana Nachtigall, she's a local organic farmer, as well as half of KHOI's very own intrepid Donna Lana Kitchen Show, on the air here every Tuesday at noon and 7 p.m. So, Lana, it may be early, but it is not too early to get organized and start thinking and planning, right?
Right. Very good. Good morning. Yes, we are thinking of spring after that amazingly cold blast we had. And as I look outside, I'm not really thinking garden yet, but I am thinking mud season. Everything is thawing. And actually, that's a very good sign. That is a very popular and very positive sign for gardeners. Mud season. Here it comes. It's nice to have some snow on the ground. It is. One thing that's been going on. Yeah.
I was just going to say that when I was little, and, you know, when you're little, you're close to the ground, so you kind of hear and smell things and see things that are happening. And this used to be one of my favorite times to, like, that moment when the snow starts to melt and you can hear it trickling everywhere and you can kind of, you know, see things emerging. And I just love this moment. And I'm so happy that this spring we actually get to have that moment, you know, of watching the snow melt with the warm weather.
Yes. It is nice. And like you mentioned earlier, the moon, we've got, the moon was up and the full moon this week has just been great. I would like to say, taking on your idea of trickle, I would like to mention this time of year, this week in particular, and actually on our farm, starting yesterday, if you listen really closely outside, the trees are doing something amazing. This is a sap run. The maple trees are actually doing their thing. This time of year, they start pumping sap from the roots up to the top, back and forth and back and forth. It's an amazing engineering feat for these trees to do that. And that's how we get maple syrup this time of year. We're actually doing a little bit of maple syrup tapping. So it's working. Things are trickling.
So during the winter, the sap doesn't go up and down. It just starts in spring.
Right. It does. There's this magic time when it is below freezing at night and above freezing in the daytime, the trees wake up. And they start pumping, which means all the energy that's been stored in the roots go up to the leaves. And then when it's cold at night, it goes back down again. Then when it gets above freezing for later in the spring, when it does not go below freezing at night, the sap stays up and the buds start coming. And actually, if for those that make maple syrup, when the buds start taking hold of the sap really isn't any good to make maple syrup out of. But this time of year, things are trickling up and down. Before I found out about maple syrup making, the idea, and all trees are doing this. That's an amazing thing. There's this huge pumping thing going on. It is waking up out there. Yes, it is spring.
Lana, do you know where the pump is actually?
Pump? I don't know. It's a mystery.
It's actually, it just occurred to me. I've never really figured out how the, I mean, I'm sure there's a science to it, but I actually don't know what it is. But anyway, well, so the trees are doing their thing. So this would be the time to get maple syrup. But now what would you say to somebody like me who's sitting in front of her garden plot and everything's been covered up with snow and I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, should I be doing something to, I'm a big believer in building up soil, so should I be doing something right now to be building up soil here? Should I be making a map? What exactly should I be doing right now so that when spring comes, I would hit the ground running, so to speak, or hit the ground planting seeds?
Well, right now, patience. One thing you do not want to do is go in and start poking around when it's way too wet. Don't even worry about that right now. Your garden is what it is right now. The preparation of turning things over should have happened last year. Just be patient, be patient, be patient. If you really want to help things along, you could put down some black plastic and help them melt sooner. But again, don't get in there too soon. Now is the time to think about seeds, and you can start some seeds inside, or better yet, start ordering those seeds. And it is more and more news, and more farmers that I talk to, fellow gardeners, finding seeds. Last year during the pandemic, and we are still in it, people decided, well, they'd like to start a garden, and finding seeds. Seeds are becoming hard to get, and I'm not saying any seeds, but those of us gardeners that like to be fussy and order a certain variety, some seeds are really, really hard to get. Their seed houses have been absolutely swamped last year and ran out of a lot of varieties. This year, I ordered my seeds right after Christmas, which is actually pretty early for me. And my orders are all starting to come in now. And I had to get different varieties because there's some seeds that are not available anymore. So get those seeds and plan. Probably a little early in Ames to start things like tomatoes and peppers. Wait for mid-March to do that. You don't want to get things all leggy. But I have already started some seeds. You can start seeds on your windowsill. Treat it like a houseplant. I'm starting seeds that are hard to start. For me, hard to start seeds are things like parsley and woody herbs and rosemary and lovage and marjoram. Those little things, they take, well, even on the seed packets, they'll tell you 15 to 20 days to germination. Now, that's a long time, and they just plain take time. So look at the seeds, research how long these seeds take to germinate, for one thing. And so some of those things you do have to start early. Like I said, I'm starting my parsley early now, this week.
Okay, so there's a number of things here to unpack. First of all, ordering seeds sounds like a good thing to be doing right now. Sounds like it would have been a good thing to be doing around December. But okay, so still time to order seeds. Where would you recommend ordering from? What catalogs do you use?
I would just mention some catalogs that I really love, and the internet is full of all sorts of things. People all have their favorites, and they all have the amazing pictures that you can fall in love with. I like Johnny Selected Seeds. I like Fedco, which has a wonderful catalog, Fedco Seeds, F-E-D-C-O. There is a company out of Kansas that I really like called Seeds from Italy. They used to be from Italy, but now they're from Kansas. But I guess Seeds from Italy sounds more romantic. But let's see, what are some other ones? And then there's the Gurneys and all that sort of thing too. But I guess I order a whole lot from Johnny's, a very, very reputable and helpful seed company. Fedco also has a wonderful catalog. There is a catalog that I sort of like called Totally Tomatoes. It's a seed house out of Wisconsin. And for those that like to obsess about tomatoes, Totally Tomatoes. Those are just some to get you started. And they're fun. They're fun.
What do you look for to help you decide that you want to buy from a company? Are there certain things that a practice a certain company will advertise or clarify how they go about doing things?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. A lot more companies now are talking about seed justice, socially conscious seeds, organic seeds. And I don't necessarily get everything that is officially organic, but those that are fair traded and are not patented. I try not to not use patented seed. I try not to use GMO seeds. And catalogs are more and more upfront about those practices. You can pretty much tell on the first page, there's usually a statement of purpose. And I like to support those seed houses that have good social justice things in mind. And you wouldn't think that seeds had anything to do with that, but it has a whole lot to do with being fair to the farmers, being fair to the planet, and realizing that seed is a dynamic way of how we relate to the world. Here's a little sentence from Fedco Seeds, F-E-D-C-O. That's one of my favorite catalogs. I just want to read you this. A seed's value is in being planted, being shared, feeding families and communities. Seeds are not like gold. They don't last when hoarded. When they sit in a box in a cupboard, they lose vitality, wither, and die. That's one nice thing about seeds and plants. They're meant to be shared, grown, and seeds saved. Again, oh, yes, another good seed catalog. Seed Savers Exchange out of Decorah, Iowa. If you can't get inspired by that catalog and that bunch of people, I don't know what. Because that Seed Savers is another wonderful source of seeds.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I've gotten a few things out of this conversation so far. First of all, stay out of the dirt right now. Let it do its thing without interference. So I shouldn't put any compost on it or manure or anything like that. Just leave it alone. And
if you have things to spread, go ahead. But I wouldn't put too much on right away. The important thing now is to let it dry out.
Okay, let the ground dry out. It needs to dry out. The other thing I've learned is it's a good time to get seeds now, early as possible, because there is a lot of people want seeds, and so get in your order now. And if you have not already, good seeds to go for are non-GMO seeds and fairly traded seeds. And the other thing I learned is that this is a good time to begin planting herb seeds, right? If I want to have those nice rosemary bushes, this would be a good time. And I can just take a pot, like a flower pot, and fill it with planting soil and stick some rosemary seeds in there, right?
Right, and be sure to read the instructions. Some seeds say plant on the top. They need light to germinate. Other seeds say plant a quarter inch deep. So just read the directions or look it up online. Seeds are a little bit fussy, but be careful about how deep you plant things. But again, like I mentioned, some seeds take a long time. Read the directions on the packet. It helps a whole lot.
Now, when they're all in their pots and, like, say they're in the dirt, do they have to be by the window? Mm-hmm. Do they need light?
Yeah.
They do. Even when they're underground, they need light.
Yes. I always err on the side of giving them light because for many years I thought, oh, well, they're under the ground. It doesn't matter. Some seeds, rosemary is one of them. They need a little bit of light to germinate. It's like, oh, there is the seeds wake up and they say, where is up? And they're going up. It's nice to act like the seeds are outside. Think of the fact there is sun above them and dirt below them, and windows are a good idea, or grow lights.
And rain happens, so you want to water them, too, even when they're underground. Yeah.
And rain happens, yes. moist, not soggy, moist, okay?
Okay, so parsley and rosemary go in the pots now. Lana, we're just about out of time, but just give us one more little tip about something else I could be doing right now. I could be making a plan, right?
Right, right. Think about the kind of things you would like to grow. Think about the kind of vegetables you like. You can get a lot of information online or from these seed catalog places. They also have little information for each seed, for each kind of plant. They'll help you along. Also, remember that you can also think about supporting local growers in community-supported agriculture or the people that sell at farmers market. I don't grow everything that I eat myself either. I count on other people. So think of the whole community waking up this spring. Think of everybody growing seeds, growing plants, and we'll have a good season. Yes, we will.
Okay, well, thank you for helping us get started, Lana. Next time we talk, we're going to talk about what to do about groundhogs, but not going to get into that today. That's
big
topic.
They are out there.
But Lana, while I have you, tell us a little bit about what's coming up on the Donna Lana Kitchen Show as the spring starts to come. Like I said before, Lana is half of the Donna Lana Kitchen Show here on KHOI every Tuesday at noon and 7 p.m. So what can we look forward to hearing as the spring advances on the Donna Lana Kitchen Show?
Well, besides the kind of stuff that Donna brings to the show every week, which is good food, good recipes, and food policy, actually tomorrow we're going to be talking more about soil, compost, a little bit more about seed shortages, and how to start seeds. That kind of deal, if you can think about it, there you go. Yeah, how to start seeds. And in the, that's tomorrow. And next week we'll be talking to local farmer about her growing in her greenhouse for her production of vegetables. And in the weeks to come, we'll be talking to more local farmers about what's going on in Iowa.
Okay. And you must be making your plans, too, for your farm. So I'm going to let you get back to your farm. Thank you for...
In my cup of coffee. Thank you.
Thank you for this conversation. Cheered me up like I thought it would. It's just really great to start feeling the spring vibe. And thanks for helping us with that, Lana. You take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you. And that is a Spring Song by Felix Mendelssohn. And this is Local Talk. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for the hour. Thank you for listening. Jen Brockpoller is director of Ames Community Arts Council. And the Ames Community Arts Council and the Octagon Center for the Arts are partnering for a third annual Business of Art Conference on Saturday, March 6th. So they describe this conference as helping artists grow and succeed and supporting the impact of art in the world. So this conference is aimed at both trained and self-taught artists, so it's a comprehensive approach to supporting creative artists. Jen, thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
So just real quickly, for anybody who doesn't know what the Ames Community Arts Council is, just give us your elevator speech.
Sure. The Ames Community Arts Council, it's an umbrella organization intended to represent and promote the arts organizations in our city, as well as the individual artists. We strive to train and to provide resources, and our big thing is promoting what the arts organizations in town is doing. We do that through our website, through our weekly newsletter, and our social media platforms. And of course, our other big focus, obviously, as illustrated by the Business of Arts Conference, is that we really want to educate our artists. We know that artists really contribute to the vitality of a community, and they can do that better when they have both the artistic skill and the business skill to succeed. That's what we're trying to do.
Well, it's my pleasure helping to inform people about this conference coming up. It's really a great project that you and the Octagon do together. Now, this conference this year is going to be virtual, right?
Absolutely. We're doing 100% online, which Rhonda and I, Rhonda at the Octagon is my partner in crime here, Rhonda Scott, and she and I have actually gained a lot of skills ourselves in putting on a virtual conference. As you can imagine, it's a different skill set than a in-live event. But luckily, our presenters have been really open to the idea. We've been living in this world for almost exactly a year now. Mm-hmm. And so it's been kind of exciting to make it work virtually. It's allowed us to bring in people from farther away, which has been really great, and kind of unbound some limits in that way.
Yeah, we're all coming out of this with more skills, right?
Right, exactly. Whether we wanted them or not, right?
Pandemic skills. So, okay, I looked up your conference, and these were some of the things I saw that you're addressing. You're going to talk about branding, marketing oneself online, and also at festivals, galleries, retail, and other ways for artists to sell their work. You're going to talk about funding, self-care, and you're going to give people an opportunity for networking. So tell us a little bit how all this is going to happen.
Sure. As you can imagine, the networking, of course, I'll start at the end and go backwards.
Okay.
The networking will be a little different, but we do, if you've been in the Zoom world for a while, you know there's breakout rooms and there's ways to come into small groups and talk. And the one thing that we added this year to sort of create that community that we won't have from walking in the hallways is at the end of the day, we're doing an interactive maker session. So we've got Sarah Merritt doing some Zen doodle for us. Sarah Caddy is going to help people create needle felted succulents. Kristen Roach from Littlewood's Tea is going to talk about her tea. And Valerie Williams, our local dance aficionado, is going to do a dance workshop for folks. Now, that is something that you have to sign up for in advance. So if that sounds particularly intriguing, please check out our website and sign up for one of those workshops.
And what is the website?
AmesArt.org, and it's right at the top. You can click there. It'll push you to the Octagon website, but I can say my website faster. So AmesArt.org, click at the top, and it'll go straight to the workshop.
Okay.
And then
you're going to have speakers too, right?
Yes. Our keynote speaker is Jenny Gao. She's coming to us from Madison, Wisconsin, And she's a muralist, an art activist, has a big gallery in Madison. So we're excited to have someone come from such a distance for our conference, again, made easier by the virtual format.
So tell us a little bit about Jenny. She has a really formidable resume.
Right.
What I read was that her topic is going to be, what is the role of art and the artist in a community ecosystem? Can you give us a little bit of a preview of what she's going to talk about?
You've kind of set me up because I don't have the that part of the schedule in front of me. But she, having watched her on social media, she truly believes strongly in building community. She believes strongly in representing the BIPOC community and not letting using art for social change, I guess. Uh-huh. And she's going to talk to us about how in the COVID world we're living in, how the artists are going to help us come out of it. And so I think she'll have some really good insight into, I mean, we all as artists, a little bit in our heart, I think we're all a little bit of an activist. We're all hoping to make a statement. We're all hoping to change our communities in a positive way. And she's going to talk to us about how we can do that more successfully.
Mm-hmm. Well, she looks like a really, really interesting person to learn from. So what is the format for the conference? Is it a kind of consecutive workshops, or are they happening simultaneously? Yeah. Or
we have two workshops going every hour. Mm-hmm. There's 6 or 7 sessions. When we're with Jenny, she'll be talking to the whole group. So we'll all come together and her message will be heard by all of us. And then for the consecutive hours, you'll be able to choose between 2 sessions. And we didn't create a track. I mean, there's no, you can bounce back and forth between sessions A and sessions B. And as you were saying, we're covering lots of topics. We have Tim Reed talking about losing the spark and creative block, overcoming creative block, which I'm sure lots of our folks are dealing with. Adia Morris-Swagger is coming to us from Springboard for the Arts out of Minneapolis, out of Minnesota, and she's talking about pricing your artwork, which I know is something a lot of our folks struggle with. You know, how do you determine what something is worth when you've put your heart and soul into it? Corey Hughes from Here in Ames is going to talk to us about marketing strategies and not having to spend a lot of money, but still making a big impact. So we're excited to have Corey on our project. Liz Lidgett has a beautiful gallery in Des Moines, and she's going to come and talk to us about making your living as an artist. How do you make that leap from doing something for fun and then doing something for profit? Juliana Jones is, how do you see your spark? How do you see it when no one else does? How do you move beyond you thinking your art is good and knowing that other people will enjoy it as well? And just keeping your light shining when you're not sure if it's there yet. So we're excited to have her. Her creative energy is amazing. David Bright is coming to us from Iowa City, and I have a lot of folks that are really excited about his session about accounting issues for artists.
Yeah.
Lots of people
That's exciting.
Want to talk to us about, yeah, exactly.
It is.
Accounting and taxes. It's what holds you back sometimes. So we're excited to have him just give us the nuts and bolts of keeping that business going and keeping it on the up and up. Jimmy Longoria is a mural, another wonderful artist coming to us from Spring. I can't think of the town. Minnesota, coming to us from Minnesota and talking about the foibles of being a grown-up artist. The title of his talk, a little tongue-in-cheek, but not completely, is Mama, Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Be Artists. So he's going to talk to us about how you make that a viable living. And then we've got a wonderful panel coming out of Iowa State. Jennifer Drinkwater, Karen Kearns, Ingrid Lindgren, Anna Lutz, and Dave Biedenbach are going to talk to us about being an entrepreneur. How do you tie it all together? That, again, bringing that business to the creative side.
Yeah, so, well, that's really great. I love just the title itself of the conference, The Business of Being an Artist, you know, because it is a business. And right. Until you see it that way, you really suffer if you're an artist. And you know, I mean, I've even, as you know, I was a painter most of my life. And mm-hmm. I mean, I've had people ask me whether artists think, you know, when they're, it's like, so there's still this myth, you know, that artists have their heads in the clouds and they're dreaming their way through life. And in reality, it's, artists are some of the most practical people I know because, not only do you have to deal with the material world in a very practical way, you also have to run a business. You really do.
Exactly.
I just love the way the conference just acknowledges that. That's kind of the point I'm trying to make.
We try really hard. Both the Octagon and the Arts Council are membership-based, and this was something we heard from our members over and over. I have the practical skills. I have the artistic skills to be an artist, but I don't know how to make that leap. You know, lots of folks have taken classes and really honed that creative skill, but then this is going to help them make that transition to making that artwork and maybe make a little money if you're lucky.
Yeah.
Hard work.
Yes. Yeah.
No guarantees from our little conference, but we try. We're trying to make it better. And we're hoping that we can build a network. We have over 100 people registered already. And we do try to maintain the conversation after the conference is over. So even if you don't hear it during our simple 8-hour day, we're hoping that you meet someone or connect with someone who might be able to help you down the road. And we, of course, as the Arts Council and the Octagon, try to keep track of you and are always happy to be a resource. If we don't know the answer, we might know someone who does. So it's always, we're hoping to make that connection.
Well, that's fantastic. Just the support within the community for artists. And I agree with you. I think artists are part of the part of the transition to life after the pandemic, which is coming. But artists are about vision, right? And so this kind of transformation requires vision. And really appreciate you providing the kind of support that's needed for this. In the past, did a lot of people come to this conference? Were the conferences in person in the past? Or
yes, we've had two in-person conferences. Typically, they've been 2 days. So there's been a few more sessions Friday and then all day Saturday. This year, we're doing just Saturday, and we're doing it virtually. But because we were doing it virtually, the price has dropped dramatically. Mm-hmm. It's only $35 to attend. So we hope that's opened the door for some folks who maybe couldn't afford before when we were averaging about $75. Mm-hmm. And it's online, you really can be anywhere in the state.
Both the Octagon and Ames Community Arts Council are nonprofit organizations.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Jen Brockpoller, who is the director of the Ames Community Arts Council. Any last words?
Well, we just hope that folks might be able to join us. Again, it's on Saturday. Starts at 8 a.m. with a little music, goes till about 4:15. And all you need to do to register is visit the website, amesart.org. We really hope to see you there.
Okay. Thank you so much, Jen. Thanks for joining us. It's good to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you, too.
Okay. And we are heading into the last 10 minutes of the show. And Miss Anna Banana is here with us, listening attentively to this conversation. Anna, your thoughts?
Yes. Well, it's March, Ursula. So I am so happy that it's March, the first day. A lot's going on in March. We've got St. Patrick's Day. I feel lucky to be part of the KHOI team. Aww. And then also, we've got International Women's Day. You had great women on today's local talk show, which celebrating all that's happening in our community and seeds. I mean, I didn't know so much about seeds. Just take it for granted.
Well, listen tomorrow at noon and you'll learn a whole lot more. It sounds like Lana's going to take us through the whole process bit by bit. So,
yes, and
she knows what she's
Donna
talking
Monica
about.
Show.
Yeah, she knows her stuff. That's for sure.
Yes, so that's all good. And then also, I was happy about Saturday's weather, not so much about Sunday, but I think spring is upon us. But I have a heart-to-heart message from Rebecca Christian. And Rebecca is a regular on KHOI now because she's on the poetry and prose edition of Heart-to-Heart Messages the first Saturday of the month, which is this Saturday. But she has this for a heart-to-heart message called A Small Good Thing. Just after awakening at bloody 6 a.m. during a recent blizzard, I looked out and saw that our sidewalk had already been shoveled. The title of my favorite short story, Raymond Carver's A Small Good Thing, sprang to mind. I texted our neighbor, a busy single working mother of teens, who nonetheless finds time to do favors. Are you our snow fairy? I asked. She texts back that she wasn't, but that she had loaned her snowblower to the newest neighbors across the street, a gregarious young couple whom she surmised were our good Samaritans. I shouldn't have been surprised. Not long after they moved in a few months ago, the couple invited the neighbors to a distance garage gathering. Gosh, say that three times. A distance garage gathering to get acquainted. It occurred to us too late that we should have initiated that gathering ourselves. And at Christmas, we were touched when they brought us delicious pears from the Weiss family pear tree, a holiday sharing which is a tradition in her tribe, another small good thing. My gratitude for the shoveling was followed by the uh-oh feeling as a suspicion popped into my head. Yikes! Are John and I becoming the new Barb and John of our neighborhood? Barb and John, who passed on a few years ago, were the elderly couple on the block that neighbors did for. The two were exhibit A for going old gracefully. They were overjoyed to see you when you dropped in, but didn't chide you when not doing so sooner. They seldom spoke of their past accomplishments, but wanted to know all about what you were doing. They mostly resisted bickering in front of others, and they both had bum tickers. They didn't bore you with an organ recital. Rather, they waved away inquiries about their health with phrases like, getting by. If you popped into their home with your dog or visiting grandchild in tow, your companions were not only welcomed, but also lavished with praise for their cuteness and good behavior, and usually given a treat. If you doubled the batch of a modest supper you were making so you could take a dish to Barb and John, it was always the best ham and scalloped potatoes or tuna casserole they had ever tasted. How do you make it so good? Barb would ask, her eyes shining behind her glasses. And after the couple became too wobbly to return to your dish, it awaited you when you visited their home, squeaky clean, with a thank you note tucked inside. You never hesitated to drop by John and Barb's for fear it would be a struggle to get away. If your visit was a brief one, they didn't prolong it. Sometimes I still blow a kiss to their memory when I walk by their house. Upon reflection, I realized there could be worse things than John and me, gradually, please, becoming the neighborhood's new Barb and John. In fact, this small good thing would be an honor. So thank you, Rebecca Christian, a former Dubuquer and now an Ames writer, for sending that very lovely heart-to-heart message about good neighbors and growing old gracefully and being a good recipient for those other people's kindness. So
that's
what did
very,
you think about that, Ursula?
That's very adorable, Anna.
Yes, thank you, Rebecca. So the other message, if we have time, I think we've got a couple minutes, do we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, I've got another regular contributor, the lovely Claire Steele, who's all the way in England, and she provided a poem by Mimi Kavadi, and she thought for International Women's Day that she wanted a poem that celebrated sweetness, spring, women's work, and the love between the generations. And so this is from Claire Steele. It's called Rubaiyat for Telejune. Beyond the view of crossroads ringed with breath, her bed appears, the old rose covers death. Has smooth and stilled, her fingers lie inert. Her nail file lies beneath her in its sheath. The morning work's over, her final chore was breaking up the sugar just before. Siesta sitting cross-legged on the carpet, her slippers lying neatly by the door. The image of a room behind the pane, though lost as the winding road shifts its plane, returns on every straight like signatures we trace on glass, forget, and find again.
I have inherited her tools, her anvil, her axe, her old scroll mat, but not her skill. And who would choose to chip at sugar blocks when sugar cubes are boxed beside the till? The scent of lilacs from the road reminds me of my own garden, a neighboring tree. Grows near the fence at night, its clusters loom, like lantern moons, pearly white, unearthly. I don't mind that the lilac's roots aren't mine, its boughs are, and its blooms, its curves, its spines, towards my soil and litters it with dying stars, deadheads I gather up like jasmine. My grandmother would rise and take my arm, then sifting through the petals in her palm, would place in mine the whitest of them all, Salam, Datari, Man, Salam. Salam, my daughter, lovely as the moon, where that world would see me, Telejune. Through your eyes, or that I could see a world that takes such care to tend what fades so soon. So that poem is from Claire Steele, and I probably butchered a bit, but Claire will be reading that in her lovely English accent on Saturday at 2:30 p.m. on Facebook Live through KHOI. So thank you, Claire, for that beautiful poem that celebrates not only International Women's Day, but March and just spring and women's work and the love between the generations. I think that Donna Lana would like that poem, actually.
Yeah, that's one of these elusive poems that it really is very beautiful, and a lot of it you don't even really know exactly what's being said, but it creates a thought, or it creates an inner vision of some sort of spring. That's very beautiful. Ooh. Very beautiful.
I love that reaction to that heart-to-heart message. And who knows, you know, on Mondays, I'm not quite sure what the show is, but I love how it all comes together. And that's the magic of community radio, being part of KHOI. It all comes together to just create this beautiful piece.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed today to just spend the whole time talking about new life, whether it's the seeds in the garden or whether it's the growth of artists in our community. And this feels like a really great way to celebrate what's going to be a very sunny week, and really the return to life. On Saturday, I said to my old dad Klaus, I said, "Let's go for a walk," because he hasn't been able to walk in the snow, you know. And he said, "Oh, I'm so happy to see the sun come back. It's feels so good to have sun again and chase away the dark weather." So. So let's all enjoy this week. It's going to be a sunny one. And it's going to remind us that spring's coming and things are going to start coming back to life. And I, for one, am looking forward to it. And thanks for doing that with me, Anna. And we have been listening to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host, Ursula Rudenberg. I'm here with Anna Banana, and Mike Murphy is at the controls. And thank you for also being with us and listening. And remember that you can hear a recording of this show later at khoyfm.org. And remember that tonight at 7 p.m., you can hear Capital Week with Laura Bellin, author of the blog Bleeding Heartland, hosted by KHOI's own newsman, Dennis Hart. And they will be discussing what's happening down in Des Moines with the Iowa legislature. And stay tuned now for Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. And remember that you, the listener, are absolutely what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Anna, give us the last line.
We'll see you again on the radio.
That's right.